This is White Sox Weekly. Your all-access pass to everything White Sox.
Swing and a drive! Deep to left! Gone!
That was as hard as a baseball can be hit by anybody.
White Sox Weekly on the home of the White Sox, ESPN Chicago. Now here's your host, Connor McKnight.
Okay. Welcome in to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. A beautiful Saturday afternoon here at Guaranteed Rate Field. Wind blowing left to right. Lights are on at the ballpark, but I feel like that's more like the guys at the park testing out and making sure that each and every bulb is hot and active here. We got the White Sox and Mariners coming up in just a little bit, a nationally televised game. So worth knowing that Len and DJ are your only local broadcast. The way I hear this, AJ Pierzynski fella knows a thing or two about the White Sox over on the Fox call. Still, Len and DJ coming up at 6:15. Our pregame show begins at 5:40 this evening. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number here on White Sox Weekly. Obviously, the big, enormous, gigantic, gray, purple, pink elephant in the center of the White Sox living room right now, and really every team's living room, is the Major League trade deadline coming up on July 30th. It's a 5 p.m. Central Time deadline. So we're like, you know, 3 days, 1 hour, and 18 minutes from the trade deadline expiring here this season. And remember, I know we've been doing this for a couple of years, but it's worth noting, there's only one deadline nowadays. It's just July 30th. There are no waiver deals. There are a couple of different ways, I guess, the trades can get made after that. But those are going to be minor league things and not things that are going to really be the center of focus as we get to people moving and changing hands. Now, the other thing, too, to note is that while the Mariners are in town, they've made three trades in less than the last 48 hours. And another seemingly big-time deal got made about an hour ago with Marlins infielder slash outfielder Jazz Chisholm going to the New York Yankees in exchange for a couple of prospects. That looks all but done. I don't know whether the teams have announced that deal yet, but when we checked, yeah, it's just still sources reporting that Jazz Chisholm is headed to the Yankees. A trade also with the Blue Jays and Cubs earlier this afternoon. Nate Pearson, a former top prospect with a big-time fastball, a right-hander, is actually going from the Blue Jays to the Cubs, which is interesting considering that the Cubs are on their way out of the wild card picture in the National League, it looks like. Anyway, that's just kind of setting the scene for what the talk of Major League Baseball is right now, and also what the talk of the show was going to be here on White Sox Weekly. Now, there's a couple of things, obviously, that are more germane to tonight's ball game and the next coming games that I want to talk about this afternoon as well. And anything on your mind, right? 312-332-3776. That's the number here on the show. And like we always say, this is your show as much as it is anything else. Also want to remind you that there are a couple of fun things going on here at the ballpark over the next few weeks. For example, you could take advantage of savings all summer long with our summer savings section. Enjoy select lower level tickets for $15 on all weekday games and $20 on all weekend games while supplies last. That excludes the Cubs series. And to purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. The other thing that we want, a couple other things that we want to get to this afternoon is going to be something that's much more wide-ranging and big picture and 30,000 feet out, kind of. Brian Bannister, the director of White Sox Pitching, spoke with White Sox beat reporters, I believe it was on Monday of this week. So much of this stuff we've heard snippets of, or I should say some of this stuff we've heard snippets of on the pre- and post-game shows here over the last week or so, but we've not gotten to really get into and dissect what Brian Bannister had to say to White Sox beat reporters here on White Sox Weekly yet. Just haven't had that chance. So today is our chance. It's a good, long conversation with Bannister about a number of different things. And to be quite frank, the development from the draft of Hagan Smith, right, the number one player taken by the White Sox with a fifth overall pick in the first round of the draft just a few weeks ago, the big lefty out of Arkansas, he is just as much a part of this conversation as is Garrett Crochet, right, from the very beginnings of White Sox pitching development to what looks to be, you know, right now the pinnacle of White Sox pitching development in this roster, in this White Sox organization, all gets talked about here. And it is pretty clear that while there are, you know, some bright spots in terms of hitting development for the White Sox, Colson Montgomery, Brian Ramos, Edgar Caro, Jacob Gonzalez, all of whom are going through somewhat of a cold stretch here over the last 3 to 5 weeks, depending on which player you're talking about, there are huge strides being made in the pitching side of things for the White Sox. You know, whether you want to talk about one of the top prospects, perhaps the top pitching prospect in baseball, Noah Schultz, or down to a guy like Mason Adams, or maybe even down to the Dominican Summer Leagues, the Arizona Complex League, for some of the 19-year-olds that the White Sox have seen really take some strides this year. Bannister has come into the front office this season and seemingly put his paw prints on just about everything he can get to. I mean, shoot, that's the job description, right? That's what he's in here to do, and seemingly he has taken the reins from where the White Sox were in a pitching development state and just, I mean, driven things down the road in a really good way. So as the White Sox, you know, come to this trade deadline here in this July and look at what the offseason may bring in terms of moves to supplement the offense, it's going to be pitching that gets moved for offensive talent that the White Sox can then continue to develop. So you've got to know both, A, what kinds of arms are in the system that will be here at Guaranteed Rate Field, that will be, you know, starting ball games or closing them out or pitching in middle relief, all that good kind of stuff, or the arms that may well be on the move to bring in the hitters the White Sox don't have in the system right now. So all that from Brian Bannister here in just a little bit on the show. Some news today as well before we get to the lineups for the White Sox and Mariners in just a little bit. Davis Martin has been called up from AAA Charlotte. Sammy Peralta optioned back to AAA. Now, Len and DJ talked about this yesterday after Drew Thorpe lasted just two-thirds of an inning and got shelled against the Mariners, quite frankly. 8 earned runs, 2 walks, 1 strikeout, 3 home runs, 3 consecutive home runs by the Mariners. The 8, 9, and 1 hitters, Josh Rojas, Dylan Moore, and Victor Robles all got Drew Thorpe before he was chased from the ballgame, having given up 8 in two-thirds of an inning. So Jared Schuster comes on, throws 4 innings of relief. Sammy Peralta comes on and throws 4 1/3. And you figured that given the fact that both those guys had options, it's just the nature of the beast. You've got to cover those innings. You do a solid for the ball club. And because Schuster's a bit more stretched out than Peralta is at this point, and Schuster's left-handed and been used, not that Peralta isn't, obviously, but used a lot more often this year, Peralta gets optioned back down to AAA with an attaboy and we'll see you here soon kind of thing. It's you know, almost a Pyrrhic victory a little bit for Sammy Peralta. In that, he goes 4 1/3 and did not give up a run, but he has to head back to AAA Charlotte, and the White Sox have called up Davis Martin for more length out of the bullpen. Martin's a story in his own right, but as it regards the immediate future of Martin here on the White Sox, kind of sounds like, and we'll hear from Len and Pedro in a little bit here on the pregame show starting at 5:40, you would bet that Martin's here to fill an immediate need for innings and then likely take some starts later on down the line in the summer. This is me guessing. Davis Martin is returning from Tommy John surgery, of course. He pitched really well through 2022 when the White Sox really needed him to step in and pitch. One of the guys that got moved quickly from AA to AAA and then to the bigs in one season. And we talk a lot about how challenging that AAA environment is for pitchers. Charlotte is an absolute bandbox, a total launching pad set at sea level. And the White Sox then, with a very different front office than they have now, had the wherewithal to understand that the pitching numbers, right, the overall, the earned run average, the home runs allowed, the slugging percentage, all that stuff, you can almost, not totally, but you can almost throw that out the window when it comes to evaluating your pitching prospects at Charlotte and go more by the advanced metrics. And that's not to say you're expected this or expected that. We're talking about velocity and spin rates and all that kind of stuff. The stuff that really does translate from one level to the next on a pretty repeatable basis. And the White Sox ID'd Davis Martin is a guy whose stuff would play based on the scouting reports on him and the numbers from the cameras on his actual stuff. And they hit gold. I mean, other than a last start of the season where Martin, you know, was rocked pretty hard and was obviously dealing with an injury that led to Tommy John surgery after the season, he's got really good numbers in 2022, his rookie year. And I would expect Martin to get some starts here down the line. 28 years old, still a guy that's got some development left. Be anxious to see, or eager, I should say, to see where Davis Martin's velocity is at in that first year in the bigs. We saw kind of two different guys, and you would expect this too, based on, you know, the newness of Martin to the bigs. We saw him some where he'd sit around 94-ish, 93-ish with his velocity, and then some other starts later on down the line where he had humped that fastball up to 96, and I remember seeing some 97s from Davis Martin, and that makes that slider play a little differently, which is a good one. And when he was pitching up with those velocities, he looked like he really could be a guy in the rotation, a guy who could be a four or a three kind of thing with some flashes of very good starts. To say all of that, or plus with all of that, comes the fact that Martin's a really interesting, fun guy to have in the clubhouse, a good dude, a guy that teammates like, the kind of guy that would fit really well in this White Sox clubhouse, even if and when it changes here in the next couple of days. We'll talk about those trades and what could be coming for the White Sox in just a little bit. We'll hear from White Sox starter Garrett Crochet. He talked to White Sox beat reporters yesterday. And also, the lineup is out for the White Sox for this second game. Sox obviously dealing with a very tough stretch of baseball here. They have lost 12 in a row. Some stats on that losing streak and the drought the offense has been in recently when we come back too. But Luis Robert Jr. is in the top spot in center field. Gavin Sheets, the designated hitter. Tommy Pham is in right. There's your 1, 2, and 3. Robert, Sheets, and Pham. Andrew Vaughn at first base. Andrew Benintendi in left, 4 and 5. Paul DeJong at third base. He's hitting 6. 7, 8, and 9 for the White Sox. Nicky Lopez at short. Brooks Baldwin at second base. And Chucky Robinson gets the catching duties this afternoon / evening. It's a 6:15 start, so I think that's evening for most people. For the Mariners, notable that Randy Arozarena is in the lineup. The Mariners made the big trade with the Rays on Thursday night, bringing Arozarena into the fold. They are without J.P. Crawford, the starting shortstop, and Julio Rodriguez, their all-star, all-world center fielder who has gotten off to a slow start this season. Neither of them in the lineup today, obviously both on the injured list. But when they get healthy, the Mariners will now have Randy Arozarena in the fold. They made a bunch of bullpen moves as well yesterday that have shuffled the cards a bit for them, but they're trying to fight off the Houston Astros in the AL West, as everyone has been for years now. The Astros were like all but out of it back on June 19th. The Mariners had a 10-game lead in their division a little over a month ago, and that has been whittled down to what is now a one-game lead in the AL West, a one-game deficit in the AL West. The Astros are on top. The Mariners chasing and one game behind. They're 3.5 out of a wild card spot, and Jerry Dipoto, the general manager, has been moving and shaking here in the 2024 week up to the trade deadline. When we come back, going to take a quick break here. When we come back, we'll hear from White Sox starter Garrett Crochet. A little bit of an uneven start time for us as the ball game is a 6:15 start tonight, 5:40 pregame show. White Sox Weekly up until then, right here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox fans, the 2025 schedule is out. Celebrate 125 years of White Sox baseball and lock in a 2025 ticket plan. For a limited time, receive complimentary tickets to a game in 2024. Exclusions apply. To secure your ticket plan and view the full schedule, visit whitesox.com/2025. Lot to talk about today. Trades all over the place. Trade rumors growing from the ground. That's a bad metaphor, I guess, but that's what happens this time of year. I get all giddy and excited. I'm like Chris Farley sitting down in the diner with a dinner roll, just pretty new pet. I get all excited and revved up. I love the trade deadline time of year. It is my favorite, absolute favorite. And maybe you're thinking, oh, no kidding. You like it when every team is thinking about either adding and getting better for the long term or for the playoff push. Yes. I feel like I don't know, I get some extra juice out of it that everybody else, that I'd like to share, I suppose, with everybody else. One trade, a big one, reportedly made already today, Jazz Chisholm to the Yankees. Kodai, there's a couple of other injuries, actually, that have popped up here that may affect the White Sox. We're going to hear from White Sox starter Garrett Crochet in just a little bit. Kodai Senga returned. He was a huge part of the Mets rotation last year. Returned, made one start last night, looked fantastic, and is now done for the year. He's got a severe calf strain, pretty much done for the season is Kodai Senga. And the Mets have been making a push in the NL East and a wild card picture, and they may now need starting pitching. Anybody interested? That could be an interesting one for sure. Ranger Suarez, Phillies, who's been fantastic this year, an NL Cy Young candidate. He hits the IL, lower back strain. Haven't seen a timeline yet for Suarez from the Phillies, but if the Phillies are interested in getting better and winning a World Series, and I think that they are, you got Dave Dombrowski at the helm there as the general manager, more than willing to send prospects anywhere he feels like to get elite players into the fold. Maybe their players for a starting arm of multiple calibers could be interested in either one of the two pitchers that seem to be out there for the White Sox, Garrett Crochet and Eric Fetty. We'll tell you what's coming up in just a little bit here. We're going to take a 10-second break up and down the network for stations to identify themselves here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Trying to get the clocks right here on the station, and with the uneven start time for the 6:15 first pitch between the White Sox and Mariners, Eric Fetty for the White Sox, Brian Wu, a young right-hander with some very good stuff for the Mariners. We'll take a quick break, and when we come back, hear from White Sox ace Garrett Crochet. Some reports earlier this week from big-time national reporters said that Garrett Crochet would need a contract extension to pitch into October should he be dealt to a contender. There's a lot of what-ifs, a lot of what-have-yous, a lot of caveats and wherefores in this conversation, but Crochet addressed the rumors yesterday, and you're going to want to hear what the lefty said. That's when we come back on White Sox Weekly. It's the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Saturday afternoon at the ballpark. I'm Connor McKnight, White Sox and Mariners this evening. We've got a 5:40 pregame show and a 6:15 first pitch. Len and DJ take to the airwaves right about 6:07, I suppose. I don't know, it's a little uneven. That's what happens. You get these early Saturday evening national ball games. The television broadcast is a national one, so you want to kick it here with Len and DJ for the only local call for the White Sox and Mariners tonight. You know, obviously the White Sox have been stuck in a tough way offensively. I mean, it has been a really difficult stretch. A lot of losses in a row, 12, in fact. Last night, the 13th shutout for the White Sox this season. They are now 27-79. They have scored three runs or fewer in eight straight ball games, and they are the seventh team in Major League history to lose 79 of the first 106. The trade deadline is coming up on Tuesday, 5 o'clock Central. And I know we mentioned this earlier in the show, but there could be a whole lot of changes for the White Sox before, you know, the end of next week. There also might not be. It's been weird to read some of the stuff from national reporters. And I only say the national ones, not that we don't have a great crew of White Sox beat reporters here, whether it be James Fegan of Sox Machine or Vinny Duber of CHGO, Scott Merkin of MLB.com, Dale Van Scowen, Paul Sullivan. I mean, the list goes on and on. I'm probably forgetting some, and they're probably going to knock down the door and take me out here during White Sox Weekly for forgetting names. But that's just because my brain's in eight places. It's not their fault. When I talk about the national guys, what I mean there is more often than not, there's kind of a whole shape of the league that gets involved, right? Their jobs are different. The Heyman's job and Rosenthal's job, the Russell Dorsey's job, it's all a little bit different than it is when you focus on one team. So the reason I kind of like keep a pulse on as much as I can with the national guys is because you kind of get the 10,000-foot view, I think. And as it regards the White Sox, I'm talking about the big three, right? Garrett Crochet, Luis Robert Jr., and Eric Fetty. The tone has changed just a little bit here, and for each guy in different ways, right? Some subtly and some in a very large way. The tone has changed about whether or not these players will be traded at the deadline. I think, and you know, if you've been listening to White Sox Weekly here over the last few weeks, first of all, thank you. Secondly, I've been saying this for a while, and even though the tenor of the reports have changed, I've not kind of changed how I feel about it because I've kind of been here for a while now, and that's not to say I was first. I think I was just, to be honest with you, a little bit pessimistic about things, kind of my nature. But with how much was involved in any team trading for Garrett Crochet, for all the reasons you already know, that it's difficult for Garrett Crochet to move to another team by this deadline, and for all the reasons that surround Luis Robert Jr., the health, the underperformance here over the last couple of weeks. Certainly there's been a good run of baseball in Luis Robert Jr., but he's not playing to his last year's season numbers, and I have absolutely zero doubts that with a good runway here, and it probably at some point later on this season, you're going to see Luis Robert Jr., you know, the guy that we saw last season go 30-20. I think it's more likely, much more likely, that if those trades are the next big things for Chris Getz and the White Sox, that those get done in this offseason. It's possible that those deals get done at the deadline. I mean, desperation by contenders has forced a lot of teams in the past to do a lot of crazy things and ship whole hosts of prospect lists over to ball clubs who are looking to add at the lower levels and bulk up a system that's going to ensure a good long run. You think about those 2018 Orioles, for instance, one of the teams of recent vintage that has done exactly that. I know I stand where I have the last couple of weeks. I do. It's still likely. A large wrinkle got thrown into the Garrett Crochet conversation over the last couple of days. Not for anything that Crochet or the White Sox or front office, by White Sox I mean coaching staff and or front office, have said or done. But a national report that got thrown out there, I believe first by John Heyman of the New York Post, that Garrett Crochet, Heyman reported, this was not confirmed or talked about by Crochet yesterday. In fact, you'll hear him not confirm or deny and go no comment on this when asked. And I think it's important to hear the context around that. That's why we'll play it for you. A report went out that Crochet would be seeking a contract extension by whatever team trades for him if that team intends for him to pitch into October. And furthermore, that he prefers to be a starter the rest of the way. Now, the rest of the way here in 2024. Obviously, 25 and 26, the man's going to be starting every fifth day for the White Sox or whatever team. He's one of the best pitchers in all of baseball. That die is cast, right? He is a starting pitcher in Major League Baseball and one of the best. As for the rest of the season, it had been talked about a lot by this White Sox team that the workload was going to deaccelerate some for Garrett Crochet in an effort to avoid the biggest workload increase in terms of innings from last year to this year that I've seen in my lifetime, right? I think you talk to baseball fans older than myself, and you would also find that in their lifetime, nobody's seen anything quite like this in terms of a guy that's coming off an injury and a bullpen background into a starting rotation that is also where he's also been, again, one of the best in all of baseball. So as the White Sox have talked about what the second half is going to look like, we now find that Garrett Crochet isn't going to a bullpen, whether it's here on the south side or anywhere else, should he be traded. He fully intends to start every fifth day. How long those starts are, I think, are a different question altogether, and probably a question that's going to be asked each individual start, as opposed to one that looks more like a tapering line, you know, a downhill curve or anything like that. I think it's going to be more of a start-to-start thing, and you can hear Garrett Crochet talk about both of those things a bit in this cut yesterday. He spoke with White Sox beat reporters, and at the start here, he gets asked about the reports, about the contract, about the trade deadline, about keeping all of that in mind while also going out to try and dominate major league hitters. That's not so much been a problem for him all season long. Crochet is, as you listen to this, keep in mind, Crochet is scheduled to start tomorrow against the Mariners. That's a 110 start here at Guaranteed Rate Field. And, you know, with everything swirling around, it is entirely possible. The question got asked to him here in the later in the cut, you know, what's in his mind about maybe this being Sunday being his last start as a White Sox, given the fact that the trade rumors are at the level they're at. So without any further ado, here is Garrett Crochet.
It kind of just is what it is. Right now I'm focused on pitching for the White Sox, and beyond that I'm not really controlling much.
So that is a false report or true report, or can you confirm or deny it?
No comment. Right now I'm just, you know, focused on pitching for the White Sox.
What have you found about the starter routine, maybe even the recovery aspect of it, that's been smoother than relieving maybe in the past?
Yeah, I think for me it's like, you know, being able to kind of structure my workouts accordingly. I think that, you know, touching the mound that second day has, I found to work pretty well for me. A lot of guys I know like to go day three. But I think just like the structure of it, I think it's really added a lot of benefits like to my health and, you know, just to my stuff overall maintaining throughout the length of the whole season.
Did you know, Ben, I mean, you had started 7 in Tennessee. Did you know that in your mind, did you feel like that maybe it was a better fit for you in the long run?
Yeah, and I just felt like I had the ability to do it and was never given the opportunity. I had, what, 4 IL since, you know, coming out of the pen. So it was just like, let's finally, you know, kind of get to try it before I guess, close that door altogether.
Pedro. How do you put out noise that's going on? It has to be, it can consume people sometimes. How come it can't be with you?
I think that if I, you know, think about it too much or really just like kind of deviate from my routine, then I'm doing exactly that. I'm deviating from my routine and I'm not ready for my start. So I think that that's with my starts being the most important thing to me right now. I think that it kind of helps me to flush all that stuff out. You know, I've just got to stay where my feet are and kind of, you know, check each box every day.
Pedro said that there's been no red flags in terms of your health and how you're doing physically from starting this year. How would you just kind of sum up how things have gone from that recovery standpoint?
Yeah, they've gone well. With all the work that I put in this offseason, you know, I expected it to go well. I'm most happy with not only my health, but the way that, you know, my stuff's maintained throughout the season. When I was coming out of the pen, you know, I guess my last full was 21. You know, there were weeks where maybe my slider wasn't there or my fastball command wasn't there, but, you know, I've kind of had my good stuff for the most part, you know, every time I step out there. And you know, I feel like my pitchability has gone up, so it's you know, it's working out well, yeah.
How did you feel the last start? I mean, you had a little bit of a break from the All-Star game. Was that anything different that you noticed? Or?
No, it was, you know, I definitely went without touching the mound for a long time, so that was kind of the reason for the shortened start. I think that we were just, you know, kind of trying to pick up everything and get back in a rhythm as quickly as possible, but, you know, without kind of going drastic one way or the other. I think that it was the shortened start versus Pittsburgh that kind of ultimately aided in that decision.
Did you have, before the season started, a number of starts in mind that you would want to make if you were healthy the whole way?
I think that at this point I've exceeded any expectations that I had.
Is Sunday going to be strange for you at all, knowing that it might be the last time?
No. To even think about it that way, I'd be putting way too much pressure, you know, on what's ultimately just another start.
Some really good stuff there from Garrett Crochet. Some good stuff from White Sox beat reporters. One of my favorite moments in that little back and forth is the second to last question from ESPN's own Jesse Rogers, you know, about, you know, did you have expectations for this season, you know, workload wise or starts that you wanted to make? And I forget what Garrett's exact response was. Oh, at this point, I've exceeded expectations. I love Garrett Crochet's honesty in that, essentially saying, like, yeah, even I'm better than I thought I would be this year. Like, I think that's great. I think it's fantastic. And obviously he's playing it down a little bit, you know, because you don't want to peacock or anything. But, I mean, my God, think about being Garrett Crochet at this point, or, you know, just kind of in the training team of Garrett Crochet and kind of understanding, you know, you go through all this whole offseason and it's like, all right, here it is, fellas. We're going to pitch to the White Sox that we want to start. And they've been telling us that, you know, that's a possibility here. We got a new front office, so we got to kind of restate the case. You would imagine it goes something like this. And Yeah, but here it is. We're going to start. And then Chris Getz and Pedro Grifol look at him and go, well, Garrett, you want to start? We'll let you start. You know, get you as many starts as you want out there in spring training. You keep going until it feels like it's not going to work. And then he aces Shohei Ohtani in his first spring training start and just gets better and better from there. And the other thing, too, here is that I understand. It makes me wary a little bit, but I think baseball has done this more than Garrett Crochet has or anything else like that. We see so many pitchers get hurt these days. And, you know, if you're my generation or maybe like a generation younger, a baseball fan, you kind of get inured to the idea that your favorite pitching prospect will come up, make some starts, have Tommy John surgery for the first, if not second time, miss a year and change, and then he'll be a member of the starting rotation, and hopefully there are no more injuries for him down the line. Right? That feels so normal now that it feels also so normal to worry, right? The other thing about this, though, is what Garrett is saying here, what it feels like to me saying is, I have trained this entire offseason and all year long. Because people don't necessarily think about the training that goes into the in-between starts, you know, the shape that you've got to keep the arm in, what he's talking about when he's talking about touching the mound on that second day as opposed to the third. He likes to get out there and throw again quicker after his start, just in between to keep things fresh and keep touch and the feel right. I mean, all that matters. And what he's saying is, I have trained to do this. Why would I train myself middle of the season to go do something else, be a reliever, force some other team in some other hands where I'm less. It doesn't make sense to him. And furthermore, he feels healthier doing this than the other things that he's done in his big league career. Which, it's crazy. I don't mean it's crazy like that doesn't make any sense. It's crazy that it's working this way, but it very clearly is. And the other thing we talk about when we talk about Crochet a ton is kudos to the White Sox for coming up with whatever means and modes of communication that they have about his health, about listening to him and sitting him down and saying, listen, Garrett, that was a 95-pitch outing. You sure you're good? Let's check this stuff on the monitor. Let's check this stuff on the biometrics. Let's check the spin rates. Let's check the velos, all this kind of stuff. That's been being done all year long, and it is astonishing how healthy everything looks results-wise at this point this year. That's not going to change what another team thinks about the possibility of an injury coming up for a guy that has exceeded the workload he's had in previous seasons by, you know, almost 100 innings now. Nothing is going to change that. And when we come back, I want to talk quite a bit about how other teams, one in particular, may be viewing a move for Garrett Crochet as we get closer and closer to the deadline. Some really good stuff written by Joel Sherman in the New York Post that I want to get into as he explains kind of the outside-in perspective from the look of a team that has no fear in trading for pitchers that come with some injury risk. So we'll do that when we come back. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. You want to chime in on this? Would love to hear from you. White Sox and Mariners coming up a little bit later this evening. I'm Connor McKnight on White Sox Weekly. It's ESPN 1000.
At Wintrust, our approach is to let Southside fans show off their Southside pride anytime, anywhere. With the White Sox debit card from Wintrust Community Banks, you're not just swiping, you're making a statement.
It's like a megaphone for your wallet.
Broadcasting your Sox pride with every transaction. Open a White Sox checking account and receive a $300 bonus with qualifying activities. Visit Wintrust.com/Sox today. Wintrust, different approach, better results. Only $100 required to open. No monthly minimum balance and no monthly maintenance fees. Member FDIC.
You like it hot? I do. But if you don't have energy-efficient windows like I do, then you're going to be paying a high energy bill. Hey, guys, it's Sylvie. Call my friends at Window Nation, 866-90-NATION. I have new windows from Window Nation, and it is saving me money, 30% to be exact, year over year, because it keeps the hot air out and the cool air in. And right now, they've got a great special going on. You can buy two windows, get two free on energy-efficient windows, and you have 2 years of no interest payments. That's 2 years to pay off your project with no interest. If you don't take my word for it, how about Forbes listing Window Nation as the best window installation company out there? So call them today, 866-90-NATION, or go to windownation.com and let them know that Sylvie sent you.
Your company can save money by becoming more energy efficient. In fact, the ComEd Energy Efficiency Program can help your business find up to 35% in energy savings, resulting in lower energy costs. At ComEd, we're not just moving toward a clean energy future. We're powering the future of your business. Sign up for your free facility assessment at ComEd.com/poweringbiz. Terms and conditions apply. Offers are subject to change. Actual savings will vary by customer's usage and rate. The ComEd Energy Efficiency Program is funded in compliance with state law.
Hey, Chicagoland, the wait is over. Steinhoffel's 5th Illinois Furniture and Mattress Superstore is now open on Gulf Road in Schaumburg. For 90 years, Steinhoffel's has been helping families make the homes of their dreams. We have the largest selection of all the best brands at the best prices. Sofas, dining, bedroom, mattresses, and so much more. Get in and join the celebration of the newest Steinhoffel's in Schaumburg. Relax, it's Steinhoffel's.
Where can living well take you? Well, anywhere you want. At Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois, we understand greater all-around health starts by making sure greater access to health care is all around you. It's why Blue Cross is committed to advancing and simplifying the health care experience for our members, no matter the state you find yourself in. We'll be forever by your side, always elevating your health care well beyond.
Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Illinois, a division of Healthcare Service Corporation, a Mutual Legal Reserve Company.
Hi, this is Dave Musial, owner of Four Seasons Heating, Air Conditioning, Plumbing, and Electric, and I personally guarantee to beat any quote on a new furnace and AC by up to $1,000. Even the so-called buy a furnace, get an air conditioner free. That's right. Four Seasons will beat any so-called buy one, get one free offer by $1,000. And Four Seasons guarantees same-day installation, and we have an A-plus rating with the Better Business Bureau. So call today.
For all the right reasons, call 866-4-SEASONS.
Welcome to Bill Jacobs Auto Group, where buying and servicing your car is more than just a transaction, it's a commitment to excellence. Our core values of respect, integrity, excellence, and social responsibility have been driving everything we do since 1955. If you're in the market for a new ride or need expert service, trust the Bill Jacobs way. Because at Bill Jacobs, the cars bring you in, but the experience brings you back.
Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the ESPN 1000 Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. Lots to do on the show this afternoon. A 6:15 first pitch for the White Sox and Mariners. Eric Fetty and Brian Wu, a good pitching matchup tonight, and a lot to get to here on the show today, as we spoke about earlier. We've been talking a lot about the potential of a Garrett Crochet deal. I mean, who hasn't? The entire baseball world has been talking about what if the White Sox were to trade Garrett Crochet, because there are a lot of interesting caveats that go along with. We just played for you the part of the conversation that Garrett had with White Sox beat reporters at the ballpark yesterday, where he went no comment on the report that he'd been looking for a contract extension to assure him some longevity with whichever team might trade for him. And they're asking him to, start or relieve in October, in the postseason, and that he expects to be a starter for the remainder of this season. All of those things make some sense from the Crochet perspective, but it does put a wrinkle into the idea of trading Crochet. Now, one of the guys that news was broken by John Heyman of the New York Post, and his colleague over at the Post is Joel Sherman, and Joel wrote up a couple of different things about this potential wrinkle in the Garrett Crochet trade sweepstakes as we get closer and closer to the deadline here. And I wanted to point out a couple of things. Now, while Sherman is writing, I'm going to read some of what he wrote. While Sherman is writing this from the what if the Dodgers make the move, or why the Dodgers would be the team to say, the heck with it, we want Crochet regardless, and we'll figure it out one way or the other, I do think that the Dodgers are not the only team that could say something like this and go, ah, yeah, we want him. You know, we'll take him. We'll deal with it. The reasoning here kind of, I think, opens up your mind to what other teams are thinking about as it regards the potential acquisition of Garrett Crochet as well. Here's what Sherman writes. Gives four different reasons. They're a little bit lengthy as to why the Dodgers are the team to make this kind of move if there is a team to do it. The Dodgers did this kind of deal, he writes, already with another off-injured starter. They acquired Tyler Glasnow, gave him a five-year contract extension almost at the same time. I don't think this could be done as quickly, but the Dodgers could acquire Crochet, potentially over the coming weeks, work out an extension if they like what they see. He's talking about him pitching for the Dodgers without an extension, but getting that extension done shortly after arriving so that Crochet feels better about his usage into October, whatever that usage looks like. Second reasoning that Sherman points out, only the Dodgers and Phillies have no pressure to either try to make the playoffs or win a division. Thus, all of Los Angeles' moves will be designed to improve its October chances, right? What he's saying there is the Phillies and Dodgers are locks to win their division. They're in the playoffs now, right? It doesn't matter for either team how they get into the playoffs, and they are most likely to get into the playoffs by winning the division. The Phillies are up 9 games on the Mets in the NL East, and the Dodgers have a 6.5 game lead on the San Diego Padres in the NL West. They need to win World Series, right? The Dodgers' season will be defined as a win or a loss if they win the World Series. Is that fair? No, but we're all crazy as sports fans. The Phillies will be defined as a winning season if they play in the World Series. Is that fair? No, but we're sports fans and we're crazy, right? Here's the second reasoning he points out as he continues. Remember, the Dodgers were swept in the division series by Arizona last year because their starters, Clayton Kershaw, Lance Lynn, and Bobby Miller, gave up 13 runs in 4 2/3 innings. I had forgotten that until I read that just before the show, and it made me shiver. To try to make themselves more bulletproof, the Dodgers acquired and signed Glasnow, plus Yoshinobu Yamamoto on a 12-year, $325 million contract without ever throwing an MLB pitch. Thus, with both of those deals, the Dodgers exemplify that they will take huge risks to get the kind of high-end stuff starters teams crave for the playoffs, Garrett Crochet obviously being one of those. Would the Dodgers take another risk to try to line up a postseason trio of Crochet, Glasnow, and Yamamoto? Crochet leads major league qualifiers with a 35.4% strikeout percentage. Glasnow is next at 33%, and Yamamoto, who's at 27.9%, would be 11th if he had enough innings. That's less to do about why the Dodgers would trade for him and more just to think about Crochet leading all of Major League Baseball with a 35.4% strikeout percentage, or at least qualified pitchers. It's bananas what Garrett Crochet has been able to do this year. His third reason is this. By knowing they're in the playoffs already, Sherman writes, the Dodgers could let Crochet even start once a week to not skyrocket his innings. And this is Connor talking. I think that's entirely possible if a trade isn't made, and Crochet could be on a bit of a different schedule there. I know that we just played for you the sound that he wants to be on that routine and in that schedule and stuff, and that is absolutely true. It is also true that a big jump in innings scares most of baseball, right? And that idea isn't one that's, you know, just fear-based. It is real, right? I mean, it doesn't come from nowhere. And even some of the old seam heads, and I say that with reverence and respect, say, well, listen, if a guy can take it, he can take it. You got to pitch him. How is he going to learn to put up 200 innings in a season if he doesn't get the chance to put up 200 innings in a season? Yes. But I think they would also say, most if not all of those guys would also say, the jump from last year to this year for Crochet is the jump that you do worry about. And maybe do taper off just a little bit. Maybe by making him a once a week kind of guy, like Sherman's writing about here in the Post. Now, the fourth reasoning he points out is this. The Dodgers can just acquire Crochet and not extend him and hope that the competitive juices take over and he wants to perform in the playoffs. Matt Harvey and CC Sabathia had situations like this earlier. Harvey got dealt, said he wasn't going to pitch. CC Sabathia was dealt from the then Cleveland Indians to the Milwaukee Brewers. And then, if I remember right, at least this is my perception of it as a young man, CC Sabathia pitched every other day for the Brewers for the better part of 2.5 months and helped Milwaukee make the playoffs. I mean, he was unbelievable that season. Just kept on starting and was nails. If I remember correctly, Sabathia is one of, if not the last guy, to get both AL and NL Cy Young votes in the same season. That's how good he was for either squad. I mean, it was just amazing to watch. So, you know, you have a situation, and Sabathia knew this in the moment. It built a little bit different, and he had the workload and the history of starting in the bigs, of course, one of the league's best while pitching for Cleveland in his day. But he said, you know, the hell with it. I want to make the playoffs. I want to make this push. I'm there for the Brewers, and here's what it is. I don't need the contract. So he just pitched. Anyway, Sherman writes, if those juices don't take over, the downside is they have 2 years of control moving forward at low prices for him to team up in the 25 and 26 rotation that would add Shohei Ohtani and Glasnow and Yamamoto. Gosh, can you imagine those four in a rotation? I mean, it would certainly be something else. But then you would kind of have this bad blood, I guess, or at least certainly the questions about and the perception of it going around if you did trade for a player that, you know, wasn't capable or willing, I suppose, to pitch into October. And I don't think Garrett is either one of those things. He's a smart guy. He really understands, you know, pitching and seems to, you know, truly enjoy the competition of it all. After all, it takes a certain kind of guy to stand up in the offseason, one where you're coming back from Tommy John and some shoulder issues, and go, hey, you know, raise that left hand arm of his and go, hey, I am a starter. I can be a starter in this league. And to say that to the organization takes some competitive juice. It takes some chutzpah. It takes some cojones. And he did those things. And has succeeded in all of it, and exceeded expectations, even from his own wildest dreams. So, yeah, I thought the perspective there, from the outside looking in, and Sherman, you know, writing from the New York media base is certainly an outsider, or at least an outside perspective here in Chicago and in LA, where the Dodgers are, of course. And, you know, I think it's valuable too. I also don't think that the Dodgers are the only team that could deal with some of those issues that he writes that they're the only team capable of withstanding. I kind of think that the Orioles could do the same. I kind of think that the Phillies might be able to do the same. Their drive to trade for Crochet might be a little bit different. The Orioles seem more than willing to compile. They just traded for Zach Eflin yesterday. More than willing to just kind of compile some, you know, major league average arms, guys who can flash in good starts and call that the rotation and rely on the enormous depth of offensive prospects they have in order to push them through. And, you know, the Phillies, the Rangers, Suarez injury aside, that happened last night. We brought that up earlier on in the show, a back injury that's got him on the IL. That maybe changes the calculus some, but up until that point, it seemed the Rangers were kind of set in terms of starting, or Rangers, the Phillies were kind of set in terms of starting pitching as it is. Maybe that changes a little bit. I certainly think there needs to be another 24 hours or so for all of us to assess, you know, kind of the reporting around the Phillies and seeing where they're at. That may change. That could indeed change and put them right back into the conversation for a guy like Garrett Crochet. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We've been doing all of this talk about pitching here today, and that'll continue. We're going to hear from White Sox Director of Pitching, Brian Bannister, a little bit later on in the show. Your chance to drop a phone call or two here as the afternoon goes on White Sox Weekly. I'm Connor McKnight. You got the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox and Mariners coming up in just a bit here. A 6:15 first pitch White Sox trying to stop this 12-game losing streak. Sox fans, bring your group to the ballpark for Miller Lite Baseball and Brews with one ticket and two beers starting at just $19. Check out our newly added August game dates and plan your next summer outing. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/brews. Also, head to the ballpark Monday, August 12th for Grateful Dead Night. Receive a limited edition co-branded Grateful Dead t-shirt when you purchase a specially priced ticket. Limited availability. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. That's the stuff we've got going on at the park. And you can get yourself involved in a fun time out here as we get closer and closer to the end of July. Some news here just breaking from the White Sox. It is not trade-related, so you don't have to text any of your friends right now. You can keep driving, thumbs at 10 and 2, and get yourself safely to your next destination. Do not text and drive. But I can let you know this. The White Sox just told everybody Mike Clevinger will undergo disc replacement surgery on his neck on August 1st and will miss the remainder of the season. Clevinger had made a couple of rehab starts, had a rehab shut down and reevaluated. Clevinger pitched well for the White Sox last season and was signed into this season as the White Sox felt, obviously, that they needed some innings, a veteran to take up some innings. He made 4 starts for the White Sox this year, 16 total innings, was rough. 12 earned runs, 4 home runs, 15 strikeouts, and 9 walks for Mike Clevinger in limited duty this year, and will be shut down for the rest of the season. He signed a 1-year deal with the White Sox this year after accepting a buyout, a mutual option that essentially landed in a buyout last year. Was looking around at some other options during the offseason, couldn't find what he wanted, signed with the White Sox halfway through, and injuries are going to cut his season short this year. Fortunately for the White Sox, they have found plenty of pitching options as it regards starters. Drew Thorpe, yesterday notwithstanding, Jonathan Cannon have both pitched well for them and been able to take a good number of innings. It's not been the pitching, especially here of late, that has caused the 12-game skid for the White Sox. It's been the offense instead. So fortunately, on the White Sox side of things, that injury to Mike Clevinger that's got him out the rest of the year does not affect the shape and scope of the young pitching development that the White Sox have been, that's been the bright spot, rather, of the 2024 White Sox, such as it is. Speaking of pitching development, White Sox Director of Pitching Brian Bannister spoke with White Sox beat reporters earlier in the week. This is some big stuff from the brightest part of the organization, the development of the pitching, all the way up and down from the major leagues all the way through the lowest level of the minors. That has been the real big stuff for the White Sox this year. You'll hear the beginning of that interview when we come back. It's White Sox Weekly on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Enter the Ultimate Fan Sweepstakes for your chance to create your own hot dog, presented by Vienna Beef. July's winner will work with the Chicago White Sox head chef to create and name their own hot dog. They'll be sold in stadium. The winner will also receive 25 tickets to the CIBC Fan Box to host their family and friends. Enter at whitesox.com/sweepstakes. I highly recommend you name your hot dog the Darren Jackson. You don't have to, but you should. White Sox Director of Pitching development. Brian Bannister joined White Sox beat reporters for a media sesh, just a baseball talk sesh, just some people talking baseball. It was really good stuff. We had Brian Bannister on White Sox Weekly earlier this offseason, shortly after he joined the front office. Had an awesome talk, just a, you know, from top to bottom about the nuts and bolts of the White Sox pitching development and what he's looking to do. They drafted Hagen Smith with the 5th overall pick, the big lefty out of the University of Arkansas. And that's where this conversation begins, but it goes everywhere and fills you in on everything that's going on with the White Sox pitching development state of things. The first voice you'll hear is going to be Scott Merkin of MLB.com asking the first question to Brian Bannister. So here is that talk.
Hey, Brian, you guys just announced today that Hagen Smith has signed your first-round pick, number 5 overall. Can you just shed a little light on what you liked about him and kind of project him moving forward, even at this early stage?
Yeah, great question. Obviously, the performance track record, there's not enough quality left-handers out there, and he was the best in college this year. really a nice power fastball that misses bats, unique approach angles, ability to spin a breaking ball. You know, I've had the opportunity to work with both Chris Sale and Carlos Rodon, who both had tremendous success with the White Sox. And when looking at our ballpark and the types of pitchers that play in our park, he fit the mold. You can see the success that Crochet has had this year with the addition and addition of the cutter and then the reshaping with Arsenal, kind of taking a leap forward to a number one type starter in the league. And we think Hagen has that type of ceiling and that type of stuff.
How important is it, even when you have a good base of pitching, or so it seems now, just to keep adding to that? And, you know, you can never have too much, I guess, is the old adage. And also a guy who's elite or appears to be elite like Hagen.
Yeah. I mean, you look at our team this year, the thing that stands out is lack of run production. So I think, you know, bats were a priority. But at the end of the day, you have to take best available with the slot we were picking in. So I'm as big a proponent of drafting bats. You look at the teams that have won World Series over the last decade, and they often started with a position player core. So getting Hagen, he was the best arm available and the best at our spot, because we wanted to either get somebody playing up the middle or a power lefty arm. And so just being able to get somebody of his caliber fitting into our style that we believe will play well in the 81 games we play in our ballpark, I think was huge for us. And knowing that we can develop a pitcher like that and help him to reach his ceiling.
I guess, what about a style do you feel like is particularly suited to Karen D. right field? I know great pitchers play everywhere, but what about him really fits the surroundings?
You know, when I looked at lefty starters that have done really well over the years, there's certain characteristics to their breaking ball that plays well off their velocity. And Hagen, with what he's done at Arkansas and kind of the reshaping of his breaking ball, really took that leap forward. So you look at Carlos Rodon's shape, anybody that made a significant jump over the years, the Corbins of the world, their slider is able to have a slight topspin component to it, kind of get into that negative vert territory that allows it to miss righty bats consistently. And then they're able to overwhelm lefties with their velocity. So it's a skill set that has a great foundation. And then I'm generally of the opinion that if a pitcher has a good breaking ball, you add a second good breaking ball. You saw Corbin do that with the slower curve. We did that in San Francisco with Rodon. Instead of the changeup, throwing a second lower curveball just to gain count leverage and steal strikes and kind of keep them in a supinated hand position that allows that primary breaking ball to really play up. So looking forward to some type of similar pattern as I get to know him. But we'll make a decision over the years on the changeup versus a second breaking ball in order to give him that additional weapon to help get major league hitters out.
Yeah. On that topic, like, you know, fastball slider guy dominates in college, you kind of expect him to add pitches in pro ball, but he's kind of already, at least talking to him, he's worked on cutter, changeup a little bit. But how much did the kind of big sweep of his slider kind of indicate to you what the next step might be, whether it's adding a cutter or seam shift changeup or all the things you could do with it?
Yeah, and I'll put his slider not in the sweeper category, but more in the gyro slider with bigger horizontal break. The way he holds it is not a traditional sweeper grip. He doesn't try to go for the max horizontal that you see some of the lefties, or more like our later pick, Larson, who has the bigger sweep on the breaking ball, more like a Chris Sale. So I think Hagen is closer to Rodon in the breaking ball shape and power, and then looking to just play a softer shape off that allows us to affect hitters' timing, but really just set up that north-south dynamic with his velo and that depthy topspin gyro slider.
Hey, Brian, what have you noticed in terms of stamina from Garrett to this point in the season? And what kind of is the plan in terms of his second half and what that might look like as he obviously continues to go through something that he hasn't been through before?
Yeah, it's nice that he's had a starter history in college. And then obviously his path was accelerated to the big leagues. My primary concern was more the strike throwing. Whenever you have a heavy walk pitcher out there trying to pitch in a starting role, they tend to have very inefficient innings, higher pitch count innings, which can disrupt the flow of his starts. But really, I think the big key, and I give credit to Ethan Katz, was just recognizing that the sweeper that he's traditionally thrown was getting clipped by right-handers. They were able to pull it for power. And Garrett, the big thing was he tucks his thumb on his fastball and his sweeper. And the key, I think, was untucking the thumb on the cutter. That was kind of the breakthrough in spring training that he did on his own, because we were trying to throw a cutter holding that same tucked thumb position that you see a Max Scherzer use, for example. And once he kind of released the thumb and put it up on the side, all of a sudden the cutter took another step forward as far as pitch quality, and it wasn't getting clipped by righty. So once you saw the sweeper usage come down, the cutter usage go up. Now all of a sudden his walk rate dropped dramatically, and he wasn't giving up the home runs that he was giving up on the sweeper. And I think that just allowed him to go out there and have very clean, efficient outing. And he's such a workhorse of a pitcher. He's massive. His force production is outstanding. He has kind of the mass of a Paul Skenes, that type of a big pitcher. And so I'm not as concerned about his durability. But what I like is the ability for him to be more efficient in his innings because of that cutter. I think smooths out his the quality of his innings, and it just allows him to take a little workload off of himself, where he's not throwing a ton of 25, 30 pitch innings because of higher walks, but he's able to get through some clean innings and really keep his overall volume down and recovery up.
Pedro has talked a lot about what, you know, about limiting him and, you know, trying to creatively find some ways to extend his rest and stuff like that. I know Garrett says he's not a big fan of an innings count. Do you guys have a number in mind, or is it really just trying to follow him start by start and see how he's responding?
You know, the tricky part is what we've done to pitchers is we've basically reduced their volume and increased their output. We've turned them from marathon runners into sprinters. We've turned them from, you know, pitchers that could throw 150 pitches like my dad did back in the day, to where, you know, 105 is a dirty number now. And the human body is pretty amazing at what it can do. It's really about finding that balance between the intensity of the output and the volume they're throwing. And so I think as an industry, as we've added more layers in sports science and more people are involved, because essentially anytime a pitcher or player gets hurt, there's perceived job risk and job security at stake for people in the industry. So what that serves to do is just keep pushing pitch counts lower and lower. But I do think true workhorse pitchers that have the frame that Crochet has are able to throw more pitches more consistently and do it for a longer period of time. And I really think the key is allowing him to have an arsenal that goes out and gets outs efficiently. So I'm not as big on strategic deloads or really reducing pitch counts. I look more at how hard does a pitcher have to work to get through his outings. And I think the way that he's pitching and the efficiency of it gives him a little more leeway. But ultimately, I defer to Pedro and the medical staff. But I think as an industry, we've probably erred too much on holding pitchers back, and that can be just as detrimental. There's many case studies of organizations trying to not throw their new draft picks for the second half of the year and not having them throw at all, and it led to actually an increase in injury. So I think we're still as an industry trying to find that balance. I think we have some creative strategies we're going to employ into year end to preserve him, given it's going to be a big jump in workload. But I think overall, I'm very bullish on him for the future and what he's going to be able to do from a volume perspective.
Yeah, I guess how does that apply to kind of the new picks with, you know, Smith and Larson and others, and in terms of you want to kind of keep them working, but also maybe they don't have the tools yet developed the way Garrett does to work through outings efficiently where they can have some of those high stress innings that you're talking about?
Yeah, I'm always very careful. We see it more and more. You know, you can look at the late free agent signings, the Jordan Montgomerys, I remember Alex Cobb back in the day, Greg Holland, Craig Kimbrell. Pitchers that have signed late often get off to horrible starts. And the reason is they have this big deload period where they don't want to throw because there's tens of millions of dollars at stake. And because they haven't thrown, they really never get into shape until often the second half of the year. And you're trying to avoid scenarios like that. The arm, every time you throw, it breaks down a little bit, but it elongates and stretches out, and it's actually safer for the pitcher to throw than to not throw. So I think you have to be careful of completely deloading pitchers. And really what I look to is, you know, what have they been doing up to the draft? Are they progressively ramped up where their arm is in shape, or did they take the time completely off once the season ended into the draft? That's a big factor. Another factor is just the medical assessment, the strength and conditioning assessment. Is there shoulder weakness? Is there elbow forearm weakness? We're trying to put all those factors into play and then put them out there and not be afraid. They are pitchers. We need them to throw. They benefit from throwing. You just don't want to elongate the season too much where their workload is way beyond anything they've done. At least with the minor league season going to the 6 days on, 1 day off format, it's a little bit of a transition between the once a week in college to the minor leagues and then before going to the every 5 days in the major leagues. So looking to have them throw, looking to have them compete, have some intent by year end, and not just completely deload them and take it off.
Back to Smith, I was just curious what you thought on like his short arm stroke was, both on how it projected to command and also does it play into what you're talking about with his approach angles being appealing?
Yeah, he definitely has the shorter arm action out front. You know, you see it in a lot of premium breaking ball pitchers. They almost slap themselves in the chest when they follow through. You see it in the Garrett Coles, the Charlie Mortons, guys like that. It kind of shows their bicep dominance and their arm action. So it is something we discussed. He is a premium breaking ball pitcher, and that type of arm action lends itself to that. But we will watch his workload. It probably will put, over the long run, you know, additional stress on his shoulder. But that's something that we factored in. And you don't want to change a pitcher's natural anatomy. You want to find synergy with it so that they're able to move the way that their body's put together. And so I actually like the deception of the shorter arm stroke, the way that he can create those premium flatter approach angles in the top of the zone with the fastball and contrast that with the slider. So there's a lot of nice features there, but it is unique. And whenever you run across the pitcher that has a unique arm action, you want to factor it in what's causing that anatomically, and then how can we support that on the medical and strength and conditioning side.
It's White Sox Director of Pitching Development, Brian Bannister. We got more on the other side of a quick break. I mean, you think that's a lot about pitching and the state of the White Sox system. Just wait. There's more. 312-332-3776. That's the phone number. We'll have some space for phone calls on the other side of the rest of the interview. We're going to pause it real quickly right here at the top of the hour for station identification. Head to the ballpark Tuesday, August 13th for Yacht Rock Night, presented by City Cruises, as the White Sox take on the Yankees at 7:10 p.m. The first 10,000 fans in attendance will receive a long-sleeve performance shirt. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. More from Brian Bannister when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Sox fans, bring your group to the ballpark with a family pack presented by ExxonMobil. Check out our newly added August game dates and plan your next summer outing. Each purchase tickets includes a game ticket, hot dog, drink, bag of chips, and a cookie. For more information, visit whitesox.com/family. I'm Connor McKnight. It's White Sox Weekly. White Sox Director of Pitching Development, Brian Bannister, spoke with reporters earlier. You heard part one earlier in the show. Here is part two.
Just what did you like about Larson? The early sketches of the profile are, you know, low slot lefty and brings a lot of uniqueness, but what projected it really excitingly as a starter?
He took a big leap forward. Another lefty that can pitch in the mid-90s. We thought there were seam effects on the fastball. The breaking ball shape is almost a dead ringer for Chris Sale. So we like that aspect. It's really hard to find lefties with premium breaking balls, and I'm always looking for that. So I think the combination of the hypermobility that he has, the ability to add mass over time, already showing the premium velocity for lefty, and Mini Scout said one of the better breaking balls in the entire draft. It was an exciting package to get, and being kind of a northern cold weather kid who switched down to IMG, there's probably more in the tank from a physicality side that I'll look forward to watching him add over the years.
Hey, Brian, I think we asked you about this in Arizona, but Noah Schultz progression this year, what have you seen from overall? And I mean, how close, I don't know if this is a fair question to ask, but how close do you see him to being big league ready even at this young age?
You know, got the chance after the Futures game, he came out to Chicago and we got to throw a pen during the draft week. And, he's just an exciting kid because it's an XL frame. He's extremely tall. A lot of those pitchers don't develop good body control early on. You saw the Randy Johnsons of the world take extra time to get to league average walk rates, and oftentimes in their late 20s, early 30s. But he's already got great command. He controls the zone. I don't think he really understands how much he can do with his arsenal. He can generate seam effects. He was showcasing both a cutter and a seam effects changeup while we were working with him. And those are things he hasn't even fully tapped into yet. It's primarily fastball and bigger breaking ball. So it's an exciting kid, another power lefty that throws strikes, that can really spin the ball, that has the opportunity to learn about how to use the seams for later and better movement. But really a receptive kid with tremendous aptitude and self-awareness of who he is and what he needs to do out there, a hard worker. So looking forward to having a lot of these premium lefty arms on the major league pitching staff in the near future.
Now, you just talked about Schultz, but you know, whether it's Eater or Iriarte or Bush or any of these guys, you guys haven't been shy about, you know, giving some youngsters big league chances. Do you see this, some of these guys from this crop of pitching prospects that you have reaching the major leagues and getting a chance before the end of this season?
I personally am a big believer in getting the minor league starters into the major league bullpen at year end. It accomplishes a couple things. One, they learn the stadium, their surroundings, their routine, the workflow, the timing of everything that happens at the major league level. Two, they get to face major league hitters with a tick better stuff because they're coming out of the pen. So you get a little velo bump, you get a little stuff plus bump in their pitch quality. And lets them get immediate feedback, not only having a little success because their stuff's a little bit better, but two, finding out, do I have platoon splits? Are they seeing a pitch a little better than the minor leaguers are? Am I tipping in any way, trying to clean that up? It's a nice little way to kind of audit a minor league pitcher and see, is he ready to be a starter in the big leagues? So that kind of experience and that kind of transition can then carry over into the offseason as far as what they work on, and then prepare them, if they are going to stay a starter, for the next major league spring training with a little time under their belt. And I've just seen over the years, pitchers that go through that type of transition really have success and really feel more confident coming off of a really productive offseason and coming out and really opening eyes in major league spring training.
And then obviously Drew Thorpe, his results have been fantastic, you know, the last five starts or so. What have you noticed from your standpoint about what's making him effective and what's really promising for him as he moves forward?
You know, it's a premium changeup. We've worked on separating out. Ethan Katz has done a good job on separating his cutter and slider. There's a hidden arm action there. That was one of the things I liked. Kind of Lucas Giolito style. You see Cutter Crawford with Boston. That hand comes out of the back of the head. It's harder to see. It's something I look for in pitchers with really, really good changeups, as they hide the ball and it doesn't give the batter additional visual information that a changeup is coming. So we can all see that, you know, the batted ball luck's been favorable so far. But to his credit, you know, he really goes out there and wants to be an elite pitcher. He understands sequencing. He knows how to pitch. His routine in the bullpen, it looks like a 10-year veteran already. So I give him a lot of credit to his poise, his ability to execute, ability to bounce back from a bad outing, and really go out there and give us 6-plus innings, which every starting pitcher is struggling to do nowadays because they're tending to get pulled so fast. So, you know, these young rookies, they're figuring out on the fly, but to their credit, they're holding their own. And I think with Thorpe, it's the cornerstone around the changeup and the hidden arm action.
Yeah, Brian, off of that, what's impressed you about Jonathan Cannon, particularly coming back from Charlotte?
Yeah, I was able to spend time with him in AAA, and the arsenal he's trying to throw is complicated. I went through that transition with Logan Webb. You see Eric Fetty make that transition going over to Korea and coming back. It's not intuitive for everybody. Prioritizing the seams on the baseball above velocity or other mechanical cues. And so at all times, for a young pitcher, making sure that you're getting that late movement, you know, the Greg Maddux, Kyle Hendricks type of movement, where even if you don't have a lot of velo that day, you're able to get ground balls or weak contact or have a lot of efficient innings that allow you to go 6-7 plus innings in a game. So even if you're giving up 3-4 runs, coming out of the game 7 innings later has a lot of value for your team, especially a team that is league average or better in run production. So, you know, with the eye on the future, him getting a lot of these innings under his belt, understanding the adjustments he's got to make when he kind of loses the orientation of the teams on the baseball and he's not getting his best late movement or one of his pitch shapes is off a little bit. You know, he's on an accelerated path, and it was a quick jump to the big leagues, particularly because he didn't pitch in the style last year, and he's made a lot of changes this year. So still able to do that, still able to go out and compete. He's a sneaky, big physical pitcher. When you stand next to him, there's a lot of mass there, and he's got a great pitcher's body. And as he continues to figure out this style of pitching the way that Eric Fetty has, I think he's going to be a workhorse in the league for a long time.
What's kind of the path for guys like Blake Shepherdson or Pierce George, guys with you know, a lot of, you know, very big frames, very powerful arms who don't necessarily have the track record of strike throwing, but, you know, Mike Shirley, when he talked to us the draft night, mentioned that maybe even usage could be kind of the key to reducing that more than, you know, the physical ability to throw strikes. What do you kind of see the you know, path for them?
Shepherdson definitely has premium spin ability, spin talent. Yeah, what I was really curious on is he throwing the wrong fastball? A lot of times when you see very high walk rates, a lot of times it's the wrong grip or it's the wrong fastball shape entirely. He does have the ability to sweep the ball and spin it at an elite level. So I'm really curious to get in there and see if another fastball grip or type helps alleviate the strike throwing, as well as leveraging that spin talent a little more often. So a lot of his outings, as we watched, you know, he would spray the ball with his fastball, but then settle in a little bit. And then what he did in the draft league was really impressive. So there's elite tools there. And like a lot of these pitchers that haven't fully put it all together, sometimes they're just pitching the wrong style or the grips are wrong. And you start to clean some of that up and the walk rate tends to come down organically. So he's got some nice tools, and really pitching well in the draft league, I think, is what put it over the top for us as far as making the selection.
And, you know, Lyle Miller-Green, you mostly hear about his bat, but Shirley said that you were really excited about some of the things he does pitching-wise. So, you know, he was at least listed as a two-way player. What about him, other than, you know, kind of the raw power that he has and the frame he has, jumped out at you?
Yeah. I think besides being probably the most entertaining story in the draft, which the draft room was a buzz as we were watching him take BP and you know, launch 475-foot homers. But the fact that he throws 94.5 on the mound, you know, there's some tools there. I just think the raw athleticism and the fact that he's not really listed at a position, but it's more pure bat and pure arm strength, just kind of gives us those raw ingredients that we like to be able to go out there and employ them in different ways. And I'm sure there's just, as we get to know him, there's a lot of ways for us to tap into his physicality and really take advantage of it, because some of the fast twitch that he has in his body, you rarely see. You know, I think Condon was up there and Stanton and Judge, and his ability to hit homers in those elite exit velo ranges were pretty impressive. And so, it's a physical specimen of a person, and looking forward to being around him, watching BP and seeing him throw off the mound.
Michael Kopech has obviously had plenty of outings this year where he's looked untouchable, and he's had plenty of outings this year where the opposite has been true. What have you guys kind of recognized about his evolution and kind of what he can be moving forward?
You know, I'm really big, anybody that's followed me for a long time, and kind of bringing, except for outliers, bringing fastball usage down closer to 50%. So it's more of a coin flip. Whenever a major league hitter who's really, really good at hitting fastballs knows that a fastball is coming 3 out of 5 or 4 out of 5 or even 5 out of 5 for some pitchers, they can turn around 100 miles an hour. And whether it's a pitching machine or a real human, they have no problem getting the bat to the ball. So I'm a big believer in showing your other pitches with some frequency, even if it's more to create some unpredictability with your pitch sequencing. So Michael has elite talent. The fastball is premium, but just being able to disguise the fastball and interrupt it with some other pitches, and he can really rip off some nice cutters, some nice bigger sliders. But just having the faith and the confidence to believe in those pitches, that whether they're executed or not, they serve a purpose to set up and tunnel with his fastball and create movement in opposite directions. I think he even surprises himself sometimes when he throws what he views as a bad breaking ball, and then it ends up freezing a hitter at the top of the zone or some location that he wasn't intending, and it's still a productive out, kind of back to when he threw the immaculate inning. So there's just I think an ongoing maturation process with him understanding how to get the most out of his ability, because he does have premium tools, and just having the confidence to go out there and throw more secondary pitches, even if they miss, but that it still serves the purpose of being more unpredictable to the hitter and keeping him off of fastball.
Do you still see one inning closer as the best role for him moving forward, or is it multi-inning reliever? Does he eventually become a guy who gets another chance to start? What do you see in terms of role for him?
I've always felt that he was an impact kind of fireman type guy, where whether that highest leverage moment in the game is in the seventh inning, eighth inning, ninth inning, he can go get those outs. And I think when he's at his best, and you've seen flashes of it this year, he's completely overwhelming to major league hitters, and only a few guys in the league have that type of physical talent. And so when he's at his best, it's not per se only the ninth inning, even though I think when he's at his best, he's a bona fide closer. But it's really just getting his mix right, having confidence in that mix, so that it gives him more margin for error with his command, and he can really let the stuff play out. Because I've had the Craig Kimbrels of the world, other premium closers, Camilo Duvall, and they don't throw perfect strikes, and they don't command the ball exceptionally well, but what they do is they tunnel their two fastball and breaking ball off each other, which makes really hard zone decisions and swing decisions for the hitters, especially under pressure in late innings. And then they don't have to be perfect with their command, and it lets their premium stuff play up and generate positive, productive results, instead of just focusing on perfect command and stressing out about that in a vacuum by itself.
That's White Sox Director of Pitching Brian Bannister. Some seriously good pitching conversation, whether it be about some minor leaguers whose names we all just learned here over the last couple of minutes, or Michael Kopech, the guy at the back end of the bullpen for the White Sox, who, you heard Bannister talk about the pitch mix, the pitch selection, not 5 out of 5 fastballs, moving some stuff in and around the strike zone, altering that pitch arsenal some. And since Bannister spoke, we've seen Kopech do that a couple of times to some pretty good effect as well. Here's hoping that he remains that kind of effective. We've got some trades breaking here in the last couple of minutes. None concerning the White Sox yet, but it looks like the Blue Jays have reached a deal with the Red Sox. Catcher Danny Jansen is headed to Boston. Cutter Coffey, a high A arm, looks to be the prospect, the headliner in return for that deal, headed back to the Blue Jays. We are also on hug watch throughout ballparks in America. Evan Petzold, who is a beat writer covering the Tigers for the Detroit Free Press, writes that Jack Flaherty, free agent to be starter, was the last person to enter the Tigers dugout before tonight's game. There were hugs around. Hugs often lead to trades, not because of, not post hoc ergo propter hoc. Usually a guy gets traded and then sits around waiting to get that first flight out or a phone call from a traveling secretary, then hugs teammates, and then is on his way. Who knows? We'll see. A lot going on here in the last 18 hours in Major League Baseball as we get closer and closer to the trade deadline coming up on Tuesday at 5 p.m. Central Time. Lots more to go here on White Sox Weekly. Lots to go here tonight at the ballpark. In fact, you join us here at the ballpark Wednesday, August 14th for African American Heritage Night. Celebrate with friends and family as the White Sox take on the Yankees at 7:10 p.m. The first 10,000 fans will receive a Chicago American Giants jersey. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/promos. We're at the end here of White Sox Weekly, and you can hear it's got me all choked up. I can't believe we got to say goodbye so soon. White Sox pregame show starts at 5:40, so we'll get on the move and closer to baseball when we come back on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. Welcome back to White Sox Weekly here on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network. I'm Connor McKnight. White Sox looking to snap their 12-game losing streak against the Seattle Mariners tonight. Eric Fetty for the White Sox, so they've got a great chance, maybe their best chance of doing so with Fetty on the bump. We'll tell you why in just a moment. Brian Wu is the starting pitcher for the Seattle Mariners. He's been on the injured list quite a bit this year. I believe it was a hamstring injury that had him sidelined out of spring training, and then a forearm injury actually scratched him from a start that would have been against the White Sox middle of June. Wu is going to start tonight. It's his second start off the IL. He faced the Astros last time out. Pitched well, 5 2/3, gave up 2 against the Astros. The Mariners ended up winning that game 6-4. A couple of notes here before we let you go, or at least keep you for the pregame show, I should say. One more promo to tell you about the White Sox running here later on in the year. You can take advantage of savings all summer long with our summer savings section. Enjoy select lower-level tickets for $15 on all weekday games and $20 on all weekend games. While supplies last, it excludes the Cubs series. To purchase tickets, visit whitesox.com/section. In case you were in and out, or perhaps caught the first or the second part of the Brian Bannister interview, each and every episode of White Sox Weekly is downloadable on the ESPN Chicago app. You can go back and listen. The third time that I've listened through the Brian Bannister interview that he did with White Sox beat reporters earlier this week, because it's just so darn good. And it's so in-depth about some of the big players that matter here in the immediate future for the White Sox, the pitchers that the Sox organization and that they themselves, the pitchers themselves, have developed themselves into, and some of the youngsters that, whether it's Hagen Smith or some of the other guys taken later on in the draft, some awesome stuff. So highly encourage, in case you missed it or just want to listen to it again or share it with friends, go to the ESPN Chicago app, and you can download each and every episode of White Sox Weekly. Mentioned that the White Sox have a very good chance, perhaps their best chance, of taking down the Mariners tonight and stopping this losing streak, which has become far too long, the second 10-game losing streak in the season, a 14-game skid from late May to early June for the White Sox earlier this year, and now at 12. Eric Fetty at home is 5-1 with a 1.47 earned run average in 8 total starts, the lowest ERA among all starters in home games with at least 40 innings of work this season. Last time out, Fetty allowed one run in 7 innings. I shouldn't say last time out. Last time he faced the Mariners, he went 7 innings, allowed just one run. That was back on June 10th. The White Sox would lose that game. It was actually in the midst of the 14-game losing streak. One of the things that I think has kind of gone lower on the radar, not under the radar, but a different spot on the radar than the Garrett Crochet and Luis Robert conversations as it regards potential trades coming up here on Tuesday with the deadline, has been Eric Fetty. And I think what is happening here of late is we've read from some national reporters that it's the market has cooled a little bit on Eric Fetty, or maybe that the White Sox aren't getting the kinds of appreciation, the value appreciation in Eric Fetty's first year back in the bigs that they'd expected, that what they've been asking for hasn't been met by some teams. We'd seen that in a couple of different places. And obviously, those are reports, and who's to say whether that's accurate? Who's to say whether or not the general managers or agents involved in leaking some of that information to national reporters aren't trying to, you know, help in one way or the other? Lean a little bit on the scales, as it were. It would not be unheard of. It happens. But I think, you know, what's interesting to me, Eric Fetty ought to have just as big of a marketplace, and by that I mean a number of teams involved and interested in his services, if the White Sox are indeed going to make him available, and it sounds like they are, as any other pitcher in baseball. You've got a guy who's 7-3 on the worst team in baseball record-wise, and that, you know, I say this often, I don't care much for the win-loss record when it comes to starting pitchers. It just doesn't mean what it used to mean in baseball. It just doesn't. However, exceptions, you know, the outliers on a graph are interesting to talk about and meaningful to kind of discern. And Fetty's 7-3 record on a team that's 27-79 certainly is one of those outliers where you go, ha, what's that all about? But just told you the record here at home. He's been terrific. He's been so good. 1.49 ERA and 8 starts guaranteed rate field. Heck yeah. Sign me up for as much of that as you can. Now, if you're another team too, what matters for Fetty is, yeah, sure, the first couple of years with the Nationals aren't the Eric Fetty he is now. But on the other hand, it's very clear that the Eric Fetty he was isn't the Eric Fetty he is. That the page has been turned. The arsenal's completely different. The ability to pitch up in the zone with the cutter and splitter and move that slider off the plate and get swings and misses is there. He controls at bats. He's been able in several different starts to, you know, even when things have gotten a little wonky in innings, he's gotten it back under control and kept his team in the ball game. And he's taking the ball every time out. I cannot think of a more apt description of a guy you want on your team than Eric Fetty in the starting rotation. Then you get to the business of baseball side of things. He's under contractual control for next season, so you know what you've got. I think it's $7.5 or $8 million next year. That's a bargain for a guy who's 7-3. Again, I know, win-loss record, but we've only got a couple minutes left, and I can't dive into the advanced stuff the way I'd like to. With a sub-3 earned run average, it frustrates me. What frustrates me is, like, yes, obviously we're sitting here at guaranteed rate field and wanting the White Sox to get what they need to go where they want to go. Yeah, sure. Call me biased in that regard. But I think what's frustrating is that you get teams these days, whether it be contenders or otherwise, that are a little bit gun-shy when it comes to making moves and a little bit risk-averse when it comes to putting some prospects out there and acquiring big league help. Big leaguers who can help. Big leaguers who are helping now. And I guess for Chicago baseball fans, right? Not just fans of the White Sox. And I don't love roping this in, roping the other team north of Madison in. But flags fly forever, right? And we saw the route that needs to be taken, you know, for teams like the Astros and teams like the Cubs and teams like the Rangers here of late that have had to say the heck with it, whether it be for prospects or cash, you know, in terms of the Rangers signing Corey Seager and Marcus Semien to ginormous deals and Jonathan Gray, Jacob DeGrom and all. They've put their money down and they've made their moves. And if you are a team right now in the National League that's alive and breathing, that are not the Rockies and are not the Marlins, you've got a chance. Go win ball games. And you're in the American League, and you're, you know, it's not quite as wide of a potential playoff field in the American League as it is in the National League, but you've got chances here. And it frustrates me to no end that you've got value propositions in guys like Eric Fetty out there for you, and you are going to hold up a team for, I don't know, a double A arm that you kind of liked to. It's just, you know, it gets a little frustrating to me. And I get, because this trade deadline time of year is like, it's literally my Christmas in July. It is the one, it's what I like most as it regards, you know, the major league tapestry and what happens throughout our calendar year in baseball. This is my favorite. And I just don't like it. When it gets tampered with, when it doesn't get treated the way it needs to be treated. And I think over the last couple of years, we've gotten to the point where a lot of teams like to hug their prospects just a little bit too long and are reticent to engage in the winning of the baseball games so that they have 8 or 9 prospects down the line to make it work. And I'm not talking about teams that are, you know, close and rebuilding and putting it all together, and maybe, you know, next year you get there. I'm talking about teams that can win now. I want teams to win now, to make moves that can win now, so that you get a larger parity throughout all of baseball and you kind of spread some of that wealth around. I think it's important. A huge thank you to Sean Graney and Brendan Riley. Huge thank you, fellas. This was big for you guys today, for me, for you guys today. Big stuff. White Sox pregame show coming up in just a little bit. Don't go anywhere. Sox and Mariners right here at Guaranteed Rate Field. I'm Connor McKnight on the Hard Rock Casino White Sox Network.